Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlocking your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
It's April 15th. File those taxes and then treat yourself. Motley Fool Money starts now. Welcome to Motley Fool Money. I'm Deidre Woolard here with Bill Barker on this Tax Monday. It's April 15th. Comes around every year. Bill, are you early on time or a late filer?
On time, but on time meaning the day of, yes.
Oh.
Well,
are you rushing? Well, I guess we don't rush to the post office anymore. We sort of rush to our computers to
I've done that in the past. Yeah, I have delivered taxes with all the people getting in there at midnight. Yeah, no, I've done that no longer, but I've got a few more of my kids' taxes to finalize than my own.
I almost miss those days of everybody rushing to the post office and trying to shove it in the little slots and them having to stay open late. Now it's easier.
I remember those days more than I remember the moments of hitting, you know, send or whatever from my desk. But I don't know. They're not happy memories. Not really.
No. Well, I don't usually get the pleasure of your company on a Monday, but I do today. And I know you're kind of a macro guy. You look at these things. On Friday's show, Dylan and the team, they talked about inflation, a little hotter than expected. Today, we've got retail sales numbers also higher than expected, about 0.7% up sequentially in March, 4% year over year. February also revised upward. Interesting to see what we're spending on, of course, furniture and building supplies and lawn stuff, not yet, maybe later. Food and restaurant spending still up. The market very happy about these numbers today, seeming to pay more attention to this than some of the geopolitical turmoil that we saw over the weekend. Are we just hungry for good news and happy consumers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty tepid amount of good news at 4% year over year, which is slightly ahead of inflation over the same period. Depending on which, you know, measurement of inflation you're talking about, it's ahead. But people are consuming on the retail side a little bit more than they did last year, and with some inflation. So that's how you get up to 4%. And March is interesting in that this year, Easter fell last day of March, so that moved some spending, some restaurant spending, people going out for Easter brunches and things like that, as families, gatherings that you won't have in April this year. And I know that the retail sales number is adjusted seasonally. I'm not sure what adjustment it makes for that particularly difficult to remember part of the calendar. That is, most people don't know why Easter falls where it does. It's not intuitive in the way that it moves around. But anyway, it was in March, and that's going to help March's numbers a little bit. And unless you make the adjustments, you might be misled by how good the numbers were. But, you know, one more piece of evidence that the economy is doing just fine.
Yeah, anytime we get better better than expected. The market seems to be happy. We just want to know the consumers are going to keep opening their wallets. Seems like they are. I mean, we had the consumer sentiment numbers out from University of Michigan on last week. Seems to be on pause a bit. It's, maybe they're reserving judgment after the election. At least that was the assessment. You know, I'm wondering about this and about the cycle of bigger ticket spending in general, because, you know, we had the post-pandemic rush of everybody buying things, or during the pandemic too. You know, that we haven't gone back to big ticket items. I'm sort of looking at companies like Home Depot, Lowe's, Wayfair. They're really sort of kind of waiting for things to change. How is it impacting some of the companies you watch?
Well, the companies you mentioned are going to see people waiting, perhaps, for the interest rates to improve. If you're doing a remodel or an addition or something like that, where some of the revenue is going to fall to Home Depot and Lowe's, and you may just wait a little bit longer for a better, rate on the loan that is probably going to be involved in a big ticket item, a car, a purchase of vehicle of any sort, whether it's a boat, an RV, a car. A lot of things are almost always financed, and there are choices about when to make those purchases. And the constant evaluation and half promise that, oh yes, interest rates are going to go down, but they have not yet, allows people to maybe move some of that spending currently into, one more meal at a restaurant than they otherwise, or a little bit more, in the experience category. A vacation is sometimes financed, but not as much, as a larger purchase. So I think that experiences, there's still sort of a backlog of experiences that people wanted to have and had to delay for a couple of years because of COVID. If you look at the number of people talking about sentiment, the number of people who anticipate making a foreign trip this year is at I think record highs. It's not to say that they have done it. It's not to say that they purchased the plane fare yet. Although I think Delta came out the other week and indicated that advanced plane fares looked very good to them, and they were anticipating that the rest of the year would go well. So it's still in that category. People are giving themselves the experiences and pushing off for a little bit for the moment stuff that they have to take out a loan for.
Well, let's move on to some earnings. We've got a couple today, much, much more coming later in the week. We're really getting into the heart of season pretty soon, which is always exciting. So Goldman Sachs, good quarter. CEO David Solomon, people were not thrilled with him over the last year or so. People were giving him a hard time about his side hustle as a DJ. He's sort of retired, I guess, on that, it seems. But, really improving at Goldman Sachs. They sort of shaken off their misstep into consumer banking. They're like, we're done with that Marcus stuff. But a lot of the story is just that the macro is working for them. So more activity, more M&A, giving them the opportunity to really do what they do best, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. I think their fortunes are going to track the stock market largely as they have in the past. It's a company that has achieved great things more for its employees than for its investors. It's really, you really struggle to find a prolonged period during which Goldman Sachs investors have outperformed the market. They do a great job of rewarding their employees. They ask a lot of their employees and they get a lot in return. And the amount that is left over for investors is fine. It often matches market returns. But you look at today's numbers, and if you annualize the earnings per share, it was a good quarter. You multiply those by four and you see what the stock price is. It's trading at about an 8 or 9 multiple to the run rate earnings. Now, as I say, it's a good quarter, and maybe annualizing those is a little unfair in this equation. But still, the market is not looking at Goldman's report, which easily surpassed the anticipated earnings and revenues, and saying, look, there's great growth here. Let's start pricing this stock like a growth stock. It's a cyclical.
No, it is not primed for massive growth, but it is doing better, and that is good to see.
For the shareholders, for the employees, I'm sure you can find somebody who will say it's not good to see Goldman doing well. That must mean somebody is doing poorly, you know, as Goldman does well. But I think that they've got, what are they, up about 3% today off of really stellar numbers. The market looks at those numbers and is pleased, but does not take those as an indication that this is a new age dawning for Goldman. If it's going to trade at something less than 10 times run rate earnings, then it's being traded like a cyclical.
Yeah, they're going to need a lot more activity to see that really those numbers really go up. We've also got earnings from Charles Schwab, which the market did not like as much. Revenue beat, I think, expectations, but down year over year. But there was this word in the press release that caught my eye, and they said it too on the call: momentum. So they're talking about momentum. And sometimes when a company is talking about momentum, I kind of roll my eyes because I'm like, yeah, you got momentum. But I don't know. You know, they had $14 billion in net inflows to manage investing solutions, which I found was interesting because that gives them a lot of fees. They're also nearly done with the Ameritrade sort of ingestion. They've got about 10% of the people they're bringing into that left, and those are mostly the super active traders. So it seems to me a little similar to the Goldman story. They're kind of regrouping and on a more steady path. What do you think? Momentum, do they have it?
I don't know about that. They've got momentum in terms of all the assets that are in Schwab having gone up along with the market, all the ones that were invested.
That does help.
Index funds and any other mutual funds or individually held stocks. People are employed, and there are more people employed every month as we get those numbers. And a lot of people have their company 401ks, at Schwab. So, I mean, it's a strong economy, and the stock market is the strongest part of a strong economy. And I think that all accrues to Schwab's benefit. Of course, a year ago, they were looking like they were in some trouble as they got caught up in the commercial bank, the proximity to it, and the amount of assets that were leaving Schwab for better interest rate accounts. And that Schwab sort of got caught up in, I think, a misguided, you know, anticipation that they were in real trouble regarding anything. But that their stock was hammered along, you know, not as badly as sort of the companies that really did go belly up during that time. But if you watched Schwab a year ago, you're pretty happy.
Well, Bill, we started by talking about tax day. You've still got some work to do, it sounds like. This day is also becoming a weird retail event, holiday. I'm not even sure what to call it. You've got all these freebies and deals. You've got Krispy Kreme in on it. You've got Arby's. Our producer, Ricky Mulvey, said, you know, you got the 50% off the Dave & Buster's menu. Sounds like that really caught his eye. Companies are also advertising ways to spend your tax refund. What is happening here? Have we unlocked a new spending holiday?
I don't know. It may be, I get with Krispy Kreme, you know, if you're going through, if this is a stressful day,
you want to give yourself a little treat.
You get a little reward for, you know, to offset the stress or to reward finally getting the work done. Arby's is a little less easy for me to see the straight line connection between the two. Dave & Buster's could be a night out after getting everything done. And you get the reward of the media, including us right now, telling you the names of these places and what they will offer for you without having to spend the money yourself. That is the number of times that tax day is going to be mentioned along any media that you're looking at. They're going to throw in something like this, just as we are. And I think Krispy Kreme is right now getting a little free advertising. Let's give Arby's some too while we're at it, and Dave & Buster's. And there are probably more that we could and that are getting something out there. So if you can actually get your name out there without having to pay for it, that's pretty good marketing.
It is indeed. Treat yourself. Economy continues. Thanks for your time today, Bill.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlock your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning Best Business Podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
Last week, my colleague David Meyer caught up with Julian Nebreda, the CEO of Fluence Energy, a provider of energy storage solutions and services in the renewable space. We're playing a cut on today's show and get a look at the challenges and opportunities of battery storage around the world.
So why is the demand for energy storage products growing so quickly? And how is Fluence working to fulfill that demand?
So we're a global company. We work globally. We don't work in China, which is a very, very important market. So when we say globally, it's outside of China. So we have a very strong presence in the U.S.
Yes.
Clearly, we have a very strong presence in Europe. But I'll walk you through the countries where we see where we're working, and then a strong presence in Asia Pacific. In the Americas, where in the U.S. and Chile are our main markets, we Canada open it up. And okay. What do you see? How do these markets come about? They come about today. Our technology is used mostly to integrate renewables. Not the only thing this technology is going to do over time, but that's what we're doing today. Okay. That's a function. We are providing support for the grid to integrate renewables. So we are, in a way, a function of renewable integration. As renewable integration goes into the market, you start needing services, support, frequency, time shifting of energy, points, helping the congestion on the grid here or there,
right,
that batteries can do better than any other technology. So the U.S., clearly our biggest market, is started with this. And when you see the U.S., sounds like a big number, but the U.S., a lot of the work occurs in California and Texas. There are some connections in Arizona, but yeah, generally those two areas,
okay,
or those two systems. They represent, for 2024, they will to represent like 2/3 of the demand for energy storage.
Wow.
in the U.S. And then the next comes in ISO, in all the different ISOs in the U.S. And you see it picking up coming. We're seeing Chile is now what main demand center for a reason. Most of this, Chile has this wonderful solar resource in the north of Chile, but most of the demand is in the south. So why is that? What's happening to Chile? And there are difficulties, as you know, if you've been to Chile, it's a very long country with a mountain range in the middle. Building transmission lines is costly, complicated, it's difficult. So there are restrictions in the way of transmission. So you have very low prices during the day in the north of Chile, and that you need to, in a way, figure out a way of transferring it to the center. And that's what we do as batteries generally. We charge during the day, and when the peak hours come, we help reduce the total cost of it. So that's Chile. Those are the two. And then Canada, speaking of Canada, what that was interesting in Canada is that when you see these markets, some of them start with small projects. They came out, you know, with very, very big projects. And then we have Europe. In Europe, I think the two markets that are today, you know, are the UK and Germany. The UK and Ireland, you know, not as the same country, but yep. UK and Ireland, so the eastern, western side of the European continent, and now Germany is coming up, and Germany is picking up, and that's where I think Europe will, we see the Middle East as a potential market to grow. And now if you go to Asia, we are, you know, we're in Taiwan and the Philippines, and now Australia is the, you know, where the demand is picking up. You know, a lot of it, clearly a country that has requires, you know, you don't see transmission lines go, you know, crossing over the continent. There have to be all around. So it requires, you know, that they need a lot of support. They had a lot, Australia made a huge bet on distributed energy, distributed solar, rooftop solar. So now that we are, you know, they need the batteries to support that technology.
Sure.
And I'll say the next market that's coming up is India. You know, like I said, the Middle East in Europe for Asia, I think is India. India, a lot of announcements, but you know, India it's always requires a lot of work. Why do I go over all this you know panoramic view? We believe that in order to build a company like we are first on our mission, transform the way we power the world, we need to have a global scope, but. Putting that aside from a mission perspective, from a risk perspective, markets, some markets will, you know, do different things, will cool and heat up. I think having a global exposure allows us to ensure that we can manage our growth as we, if growth is a big driver of our ability to create value for our shareholders.
Right.
Then, you know, that, this capability, and then next year, Australia is going to be very important. You know, then, you know, at some point India, at some point Germany, you know, you will see that. And then we are able to manage, you know, as these markets, you know, cool and heat up over time. You know, so.
Well, Julian, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us this afternoon. For me, Fluence is such an interesting company as well as an interesting investment opportunity because it combines growth and scale and an attractive stock price. And that's not something that you necessarily see in the markets all the time. But with that, is there anything else that you'd like viewers to know about Fluence before we wrap up?
Thank you so much. Again, thank you for the opportunity. My other comment is that this is something very, I already said it, but I want to make the point again. This is very, battery storage is a very versatile technology. It's just starting to do what it will do for the grid and for the way we power the world, the way we consume energy. It's going to change completely the architecture of how we consume electricity, how we produce it, how we transmit it, and how we consume it.
Right.
And we are committed to that world. Today, we're doing what we have to do, but we're committed to that world of it. And there are many other companies committed to this in different ways. But we're one of the few. We're the only one publicly listed, but we're one of the few that only does this. What I think about in the morning, what I dream about, when I'm running, what I'm thinking about, when, you know, what stresses me or pleases me comes from this technology. And the 1,500 people in this company are the same. And I think the importance of the technology requires that level of attention. And to the investors who are outside, you know, clearly, we believe this is a great investment opportunity. We're not going to go into that. That's not. But this is a. Yeah, I think that the people who want to support transforming the world and want to understand the importance of this technology and understand the complexity of what we're doing, having companies that only do this is tremendously important for the success of this technology and changing the way we do things. So you know, I invite you all to read about Fluence. Read, you know, you can read the short sellers and the many, many more reports that are outside. You should read them all. Don't worry.
You should read them all. Absolutely.
Yeah, you should read them all. They, you know, per one short seller reports, there are, you know, hundreds of buy sells. So don't worry. I'm not concerned about that. Go read them, figure it out. Come talk to our investor relations people. Ask us questions. We love to talk about this. We love to communicate. And, you know, hopefully we can bring some of you to help us support as we continue transforming the way we power the world and continue growing these industries.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and The Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. I'm Deidre Woolard. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.